about the other alien artifact currently on your person.
I looked at her blankly for a moment, then searched my pockets. I dragged out the shell-like thing I'd planned to give Natasha at some point. You mean this?
Hand that to me, she snapped.
With reluctance, I did as she asked. She smiled and toyed with it.
Do you know what this is, James?
No, sir.
I don't believe you. I do not understand this device, but I know it is alien and not a registered trade product. Therefore, it's illegal to possess it on this planet.
My frown intensified. How do you even know I had that object?
There are such things as scanners and buzzers. Since my arrival, I've taken great care to watch your movements.
That's very flattering, sir, I said.
It's not meant to be. Your criminality has been proven time and again. You're a threat to everything we hold dear, whether you know it or not.
Stunned, I leaned back in my chair. I'm sorry you feel that way, Primus. I mean, Imperata. My misstatement had been an honest one. For years I'd known her as my Primus. Her recent promotion hadn't sunken into my mind yet, but I could tell she'd taken my words as a personal, purposeful insult. Her easy demeanor, which up until now had appeared to be something similar to the attitude a cat might have toward captured prey it was playing with before devouring, changed into something much worse.
You represent a rash of mistakes to me, she said in a harsh voice. I should have made sure when we executed you the first time that you stayed dead. You're irreverent and dangerous to our entire species, constantly interfering with the plans of others. You've served as an unwitting tool to anyone who bothers to push your so obvious buttons.
Blinking in confusion, I was beginning to think she'd lost her mind. If you say so, sir. Turov waved the shell-like thing and kept talking.
The interference with the galactics, the rule-bending, the vote-fixing, the continual disregard for authority, it all ends here.
She quickly drew her sidearm and aimed it at me. I was honestly taken by surprise. I knew Turov didn't like me much, but I didn't think she'd resort to murder in her office. Is this petty vengeance, sir? I asked. The cameras are rolling. You said so yourself.
Vengeance. Far from it. Your confession has been recorded.
Witnesses, sir. You need human witnesses to legally... Doors opened silently behind Turov. Two figures stepped out. I'd expected them to be the veterans I'd met outside, but they weren't. Instead, my eyes widened as I recognized none other than Tribune Drusus, commander of Legion Varus. He looked troubled, but resigned. The second man was even more surprising. It was none other than Adjunct Claver, old Silver himself. His expression was easy to read. He was grinning at me broadly. An execution? I guessed, getting to my feet. Turov stood smoothly as well, keeping her gun trained on my chest.
Yes, she said. Have the dignity to accept this legal verdict without a fuss, James.
I ran my eyes over the officers. There were three of them, and my heart sank to see it. An execution in the field required three officers to make the verdict stick. I recalled this from the first time Turov had attempted to end my existence. Looks like you're finally getting your way at last, I told her. I'll take solace in the fact I'll bleed all over your nice new rug. As I spoke, I was gratified to see they were all slightly nervous, especially Turov. I guess I had something of a reputation for violence under these circumstances. The truth was, I was pretty much out of ideas. I was in the mode of grasping at straws, and figured that saying anything I could to keep them talking could only increase my odds of finding that proverbial straw.
"I'll take his weapons, sir,"
Clavers said, stepping around me in a broad circle. He darted in and grabbed my gun, and I put my hand reflexively onto his wrist.
"Free specialist,"
Turov shouted. I eased my hand away again, and Claver took my sidearm. He stepped back to my right side and aimed my own weapon at my head.
"By the authority invested in me, by hegemony and the galactics,"
Turov began,
"I hereby..."
Indicating Claver with a jerk of my thumb, I sneered. "Doesn't anyone feel like shooting this crazy smuggler instead? He's caused way more trouble than I have. As far as I can tell, he's the one behind the riots. He armed them using illegal credit coins to do it. He..."
"The accused will be silent," Turov shouted. "Adjunct Claver's actions have been duly noted, be sure of that. He will be dealt with as galactic law requires. But this is your trial, Specialist McGill, not his. I hereby sentence you to execution for your crimes."
"I'm not guilty, and I'm filing a grievance with the Nerbs," I shouted. Turov shook her head, chuckling.
"Such hubris. So noted, McGill. If the Nerbs take up your case, you might get a revive and a second execution out of the appeal process."
She took a tighter grip on her pistol, and I knew this was it. I locked eyes with her, but I could tell I wasn't going to intimidate her that way. She meant business. I wondered if I would have the good fortune to catch a revive this time around. My prospects didn't look good, I had to admit. A pistol went off. I honestly thought I was hit for a second, even though as a man who's been shot dead many times, I should have known the difference. The Imperata sank down to her knees and flopped onto the alien tapestry on the floor, sprawling limply. There was a perfectly round hole spouting blood in the middle of her forehead. Tribune Drusus went for his gun, but it was too late. The pistol blazed again, three times. He went down with a gargling sound, flopping over Turov's corpse. I looked over my shoulder. Old Silver stood there with my own pistol in his hands. The stink of burnt air and blood stung my nostrils.
"She shouldn't have said she was planning to prosecute me as well," he said. "That's when I knew she had to die."
Claver flashed me a grin. Chapter 25. Two of the highest-ranking commanding officers in the system lay dead at my feet. I was in shock, but I watched Claver closely.
"You're in the shit now, McGill," Claver chuckled, keeping the gun trained on me. "Just you and me, and two rats swimming in the sewer together."
"I haven't done anything wrong."
"Ha! You think that matters at this point? Give me that device."
It took me a moment to realize he was talking about the shell-looking thing Turov had taken from me. I reached down and retrieved the item from Turov's hand. In her other hand was her pistol. She'd never even gotten off a shot. Claver must have sensed my hesitation. Maybe he figured I was considering a grab for Turov's gun. And he was right. I felt the hot barrel of my own gun as he pressed it into my ear.
"Give me the key," he said, almost in a whisper.
"What do you mean, the key? Why do you want this thing?"
Claver laughed. "You're even dumber than I thought. You don't even know what you have, do you, boy? Wow, I thought I'd seen luck before. Well, let me clue you in. That shell-like thing is what they call a galactic key. It opens things. Now hand it over."
I handed the seashell thing to him. He aimed his gun at me with clear intent to kill. I glared at him and lifted my chin, daring him to do it. After thinking for a second or two, he lifted the gun toward the ceiling and stepped back.
"It's your lucky day, McGill. I'm going to leave you alive, You can stay here holding this big bag of crap for me. Talk hard and long when they bust in here. Maybe someone will believe you.
Holding the shell-like thing he called a key in one hand, he stepped quickly to a door and tapped the lock with the device. The door opened, and he stepped through, disappearing as it shut behind him. I looked after him in confusion. My mind was racing. Here I was with two cooling bodies at my feet and blood everywhere. The veterans outside weren't going to like this. They'd probably shoot me down as an assassin and ask questions later. Probably that's why Claver had left me alive. He wanted me to slow down any pursuers. My first instinct was to call for the guards, claim innocence, and show them where Claver had run. But I knew he was harder to catch than a shithouse rat and nearly as nuts. He'd slip away, and I'd be left to face execution all over again. One of my natural traits is impulsiveness, and I've always been that way. As a kid, I spent all my money on something cool the day after Christmas. As an adult, when I got close to a woman I liked, I made a play for her. And when I faced death, I'd always chosen to act rather than to stand around waiting for things to just happen. In a rush, I scooped up Turov's gun, which was still lying in her lax fingers, and dashed after Claver through the closing doors. Half expecting to be blasted by him the second I entered, I crouched and swept the room while looking over the muzzle of Turov's gun. The room was nice. The outer chamber had been only a taste treat compared to this. A full bar stood to one side, and a holographic command table glowed in the center. All around were self-contouring chairs, and the walls were lined with trophies. I recognized some of the heads on the walls. Like Drusus's collection, they were all alien species and presumably sentient. First there was a crimson raptor head, proud-looking, with skin like an oiled snake. A mantis head was next to that, then a shaggy lump of hair that looked like the rump of a sheepdog, and finally, the head of a Tau. This last surprised me. How could anyone expect to do business with a member of a species if you stuffed their relative's skull with fiber and hung it on the wall? Below this last trophy was something that caught my eye. There was a panel, and it slid closed as I watched. Damn, I said, and ran for it. I caught the edge of the panel with my fingers, but it was thick, and the motors whined steadily. I had to pull my hands out before I lost my fingertips. It clicked shut, and I was left panting and staring at a blank wall. I rushed back to the central console. There were a lot of controls there. I tapped at them wildly and ignored most of the responses. The room's lights brightened, then dimmed. A gentle sound like that of wind blowing came on, and then the room immediately freshened. I realized the chamber had a fragrance-producing air conditioning system built in. Man, these officers had raided the piggy bank for galactic credit. Or had the Imperator taken gifts from the locals like Claver? It was hard to say. A hammering noise began on the door behind me, and I knew what that meant. The veterans had found the bodies and were demanding entrance into the council chambers. They'd soon unlock that chamber door, and I had to be gone by then. My actions thus far were only serving to make me look guiltier than ever. They weren't going to make this a calm, smiling arrest. They'd be coming for me with guns drawn. Why would there be a secret panel in the council room of the command center? I racked my brains for an answer. I could only think of one reason. An emergency exit. At the command table, I searched for an icon that looked like an escape symbol. I finally found a picture of red flames and touched it. An alarm sounded and the door rolled open, but so did the one that led out into the waiting room. Not happy about my prospects of surviving in a firefight with two veterans, I rushed into the yawning panel and threw myself into the darkness beyond. I don't know what I'd expected to find back there, but a chute down into an abyss probably wasn't it. Tumbling and sliding, I dropped down a metal slide that never let me get turned around. Head first, I launched out of the bottom of the tube and splashed into a pool of dank, oily liquid. Coughing and sputtering, I broke the surface.
I'd lost the pistol on the way down and couldn't see it in the dark water around me. Treading water, I looked around, gasping. I was in the lower tiers of the megahab. It didn't smell as bad as the sewer had days before, but it wasn't fresh either. I figured it was probably some kind of cooling agent. The sloping walls above me were barely visible in the wan light coming from the top of the shaft I'd fallen down. I could see I was inside a larger tube about 10 meters across. It was deep enough to require me to swim, and after a second I realized there was a gentle current. I let the water take me where it would. After a few seconds of staring and paddling, I heard a clattering sound and a splash. A cold burst of light followed almost immediately. Plasma grenade. The sights and sounds of such weapons were seared into my memory. I plunged away and stroked hard downstream, but didn't completely escape the effects. Apparently the guards above had noticed my escape hatch and dropped a gift down the shaft after me. The effects were muffled in water, but still effective. Grabbing up anything it could, the grenade transformed bits of grit and even droplets of water itself and shot them outward in every direction. My feet were pierced by needles. I'd been hit by this kind of makeshift shrapnel effect before. The weapon usually wounded rather than killed at a distance, and this case was no exception. I knew that walking was going to hurt for the next few days, but the liquid I was immersed in had saved me from more serious injury. If I dived underwater, the concussion would likely have blown out my eardrums at the very least. Paddling painfully and ignoring the echoing shouts behind me, I soon lost them. The pipe twisted, turned, and finally split into three directions. I cursed and looked around, uncertain as to which path I should take. The only light I had now was the glimmer coming from my tapper's backlit screen. It wasn't much, but I could tell the tubes led right, left, and directly upward. The upward branch had a ladder attached to the wall. I was tired of being down here, so I took that direction. My right foot felt like someone had stabbed it about 20 times with a carpet needle all the way through. But it held me up. Burning in pain, cursing and bleeding, I struggled up the shaft. If I'd known how long it was going to take to climb to the top, I'm pretty sure I would have taken another route. But there was no turning back, so I struggled onward. When I came up at last to an open grate, I overheard a voice. "Don't tell me that. There are no valid excuses, only valid actions. Get to my location immediately or you're fired." It was Claver talking into his tapper. I had no idea who he was talking to, and I didn't much care. I heaved myself up the final rung of the ladder, and my soaking head popped up over the rim of the open shaft. Trying to move silently so he wouldn't hear me, I paused to catch my breath. I watched him with one staring eye. He was alone. We were at the street level about a kilometer from Legion headquarters. Claver was checking out his tapper and scanning the skies intermittently. I figured he'd called for someone to pick him up and was anxiously awaiting rescue. Crawling out of the shaft, I almost made it to him. I was about halfway out, looking like a drowned rat after a rainstorm, when he finally turned to see what was creeping and sloshing up behind him. Sheer surprise saved me, I think. He still had my gun, but it was on his hip in a holster rather than in his hand. I lashed out with one long arm and snagged his ankle. He was as wet as I was, and he slipped when I yanked his foot out from under him. I'm a big man even without my heavy weaponeer's armor to emphasize the fact. Claver was many things, but he wasn't terribly strong. Using his body to climb like a ladder, we soon both had a hand on the gun in his holster. I tried to pin his hand so he couldn't draw it while he struggled to pull it loose. "Son of a bitch!" Claver hissed. "How'd you find me?"
"They say I have a gift, sir," I said, squeezing his wrist.
He must have realized he'd never get his gun out into line with my head, so he pulled the trigger blindly. The gun flashed, and a hot streak ripped down his leg, touching my left hip.
A strip of my skin 3 inches long furrowed up and began to bleed. My lips pulled back from my teeth in a grimace of pain. After that, I slammed his head into the pavement until he stopped moving. Chapter 26. Many legionnaires in my shoes would have turned themselves into their superiors. I honestly considered it for about 15 seconds. The trouble was that my top commander had just done her damnedest to execute me. If she'd had her way, I'd be dead right now. Permed. There was no easy way to back into my old world, as far as I could see. If there was a route home to being an honorable legionnaire again, it must involve the unconscious officer at my feet. I was sure of that much. He knew more than he was telling anyone. He'd also performed the ultimate act of treason and shot his own commander. If I could get my execution order reversed, I'd be in the clear. But until I did, my own comrades were as likely to shoot me as they were to shoot him. And it was improbable they'd revive either of us to mull over the details. In my long and storied history with Legion Varus, I'd been a fugitive before. I knew the drill. I had to disconnect my tapper from the network so they couldn't pinpoint me. This turned out to be a difficult task. Legionnaire tappers had been updated since we left Earth, and they were harder to switch off than ever. They'd always been like symbiotic parasites, intelligent cancers, and now they were tracing devices we couldn't shut down easily. But I was determined to get the job done anyway. First, I found something that resembled a rusty nail laying in the gutter. It wasn't a real nail, more of a twisted-up spike that had been shorn off one of the buildings that towered around me. Trying not to think about it, I drove the spike point first into my left forearm. The pain was intense, especially when it encountered stiff resistance and I kept pressing it in. My skin gave way with relative ease, but my tapper was something like a polymer sheet about 5 millimeters thick between the skin and the fatty subcutaneous layer. To get through it, I had to spin the point of the nail like a drill until it punched through at last. The circuitry was resilient, but there were limits. The screen went dark. Blood bubbled up around the spike and I shook it off like raindrops. I knelt and did the same thing to Claver's tapper. He didn't complain since he was out cold. I dropped the nail after the grim job was done and grabbed the unconscious form of Claver by the scruff of his neck. Dragging him callously, I made slow, painful progress toward the nearest shelter, which was a derelict building about 40 stories high. Before I'd gone 100 meters into the bottom floor, I found it to be a debris field left by looters and possibly rebels. I figured out this wasn't going to work. I couldn't drag him far enough or fast enough to hide from the troops that, by now, were probably scrambling to my last recorded position. Heaving a sigh, I considered my options. There weren't many. I had a single pistol, an unconscious prisoner, and that was about it. Or was it? I knelt again and began frisking Claver. Maybe the old bastard... Then I found it. I'd almost forgotten in the excitement the thing called a key. What did it do? How did it work? I could only experiment. I'd seen evidence that Claver had passed through doors that shouldn't have opened for him. Maybe that's what this key did. Maybe it could open locked doors. Looking around, I found a doorway in the damaged Tau building. I checked the door first, and sure enough, it was locked. The door handle wasn't quite like one on Earth, but it was close enough. Frowning and feeling like an idiot, I tapped the end of the shell on the latch. I tried the door again and snarled in disappointment. It was still locked. Baring my teeth, I considered smashing the shell-looking thing on the floor. Claver had wanted this thing badly. Turov had seemed to think it was valuable, but it was a dud for me. I tapped the door all over with the shell next, hitting the hinges, then the door handle again. I tried one end, then the other. No dice. Once, it seemed to flicker, but that could have been a flash of light from the street. Spinning around, I realized what it was I'd seen reflected. There was movement behind me. Something had passed behind me, between me and the light from the streets outside. The source was easy to determine. Claver was no longer lying on the ground, rain-soaked and bloody. In fact, he was nowhere to be seen.
"I've got your damn shell. I'm going to figure out how to use it, or I'm going to break it. Either way, the Legion must almost be here to pick us up."
"You really are an idiot," Claver said.
I turned to my left and faced him. He'd gotten close, and I took a cautious step back. There was a chunk of puffcrete in his hand, but he wasn't looking his best. He was hunched and obviously in pain. Lifting my pistol, I aimed it at his chest, but he didn't even seem to notice.
"Why the hell?"
he began, investigating his injured arm in shock.
"Did you shoot my tapper?"
"Nope," I said. "I drove a nail through it. Mine, too."
Claver flopped back against a wall and groaned while shaking his head.
"Your friend. What was his name? I asked him what was wrong with you when you were making that cash delivery to the bank, and he told me you were some kind of backwoods inbred, a card-carrying retard. Those were his very words."
"You must be talking about Carlos," I prompted.
"Oh, yeah. That's his name. Irritating bastard. I thought he was even dumber than you are, but I was wrong. Can you tell me why, in God's name, you destroyed both our tappers?"
"The Legion techs will trace them. They'd have found us by now and picked us up."
Claver shook his head.
"My tapper can't be traced, and I have all the codes. I could have turned your transponder off, too."
"Didn't know that. Maybe if you hadn't run off and tried to shoot me when I caught up, we'd be buddies by now."
Claver laughed.
"You've got me there. As intellectually challenged as you may be, McGill, you've got to have a certain amount of low animal cunning. You're clearly gifted with physical power and the instincts of a hunter. I can appreciate that."
I gestured with the pistol. "Time to shut up now," I told him, and I lifted the shell. "As far as I can tell, this is the only way we can get out of here. Tell me how to work it, how to make it open doors." Claver reached out his hand, but I held the shell out of reach. "Tell me."
"It only works on trade items," he said. "Things approved by the Galactics for off-world exports like the modules. We bought them with credits."
I nodded thoughtfully. "Makes sense. I know the Nairbs have the power to turn off our toys. This thing is like that?"
"Yes. But it does more than just turn them off. It can operate them, bypass security, that sort of thing."
"So we have to find something produced off-world. If we do, we can control it, right?"
"Ding," Claver said, laughing again.
He made a gesture over his head, suggesting a light bulb had just lit up inside my dim brain.
"Any ideas, bright boy?" I asked.
He leered. "Why should I help you escape it all?"
"First there's this gun in my hand," I said, hefting it meaningfully. "Second, there's the skimmer landing back there in the street behind us."
Claver's smile vanished. He followed my gesture and hissed with displeasure.
"They're fast," he said. "I figured you Varus types would take an hour to track down the last blip from our trackers."
"We retards are full of surprises," I told him.
"We don't have to do anything,"
Claver said, hunkering down in the darkest shadows.
"Watch."
Confused, I crouched near him, but I was ready to shoot, run, or otherwise react to whatever trick he had in mind for me. We watched the Legion people, a full unit with techs scanning the street for blood and trace evidence. How did Claver think they weren't going to find us? They would be sure to check the buildings. If we ran like flushed rabbits when they came inside, the chase would be on. We weren't in any shape to outrun these guys. I considered running out on Claver, hoping he'd be caught and maybe slow them down. But I didn't get the chance. Another skimmer landed and disgorged a unit on the far side of the building we were in, and then yet another did the same a block away. I could hear them shouting and setting up firing positions.
They sound like they're expecting us to fight our way out, I said.
Claver snorted.
They aren't preparing to do battle with us, dummy. Look out to the south.
I did, and I understood the true situation immediately. There was a mob coming, a mob that shimmered with a violet hue.
We're on the front? I asked.
Apparently. We have to hold here until the fireworks start.
We didn't have long to wait. The rioters rolled forward. They were strangely quiet up close. Usually, when an angry mob approached a line of troops, they shouted and screamed threats. These people marched like a fast-moving army of the dead. They were silent, determined, and vast in number. Our side fired first. I felt an urge to rush out, pick up a weapon, and join in. But I held my position, crouching like the fugitive I was, in the dark recesses of an abandoned building. Scores of Tau went down in the first volley, but they quickly closed the distance, heedless of losses. Weaponeers fired belters. They didn't seem to have any 88s. And the crowds reeled in shock, but soldiered forward. Less than a minute after the first shot, they were in close, and a vicious fight broke out on two sides of the building we were hiding in. A few ran into our shelter and snarled, attacking us on sight. I had to pop shots at them until they fell. Fortunately, the stragglers didn't have anything on them more dangerous than a club.
Time to go, Claver said, before either side wins.
We can't just run out on our own people.
Suit yourself, Claver said, reaching out his hand for the shell. I slapped him away. Look, he said. You can stay here and play hero, but remember those troops will get a revive after this and you won't. Give me the key so at least I can get out of here.
I struggled internally, but I had to admit Claver was right. If I went out there and helped, my own troops might be under orders to shoot me down on sight. I had to find a way to clear my name first. The key thing is mine, and don't forget it, I told him at last. But you can lead the way. Grumbling, he trotted off into the ruins, and I followed. We crossed a street right behind struggling, screaming legionnaires, slipping past while they were fighting and dying. I felt like a rat, but I didn't know what else to do. Claver found another grate in the street on the far side of the building, and he pointed at the locking sensor on top. I knew the device, as similar mechanisms were all over Earth. They recognized maintenance people with the appropriate identification tags.
Tap this, he said, looking over his shoulder at the struggle. Hurry up. They're losing.
The throng of rioters was like a stormy sea. The flashing lights and shouts were growing quieter as our people died and broke, running for cover. The last knots of resistance were encircled and dragged down. The desperate struggle was only a few hundred meters away. We didn't have long.
The sewer again? I asked. Can't we hijack a skimmer or something?
Claver pointed at the mob.
We have to disappear immediately.
With reluctance in my heart, I tapped the lock on the sewer grate with my odd little shell. It popped open, rotating and revealing a ladder that led down into the inky, stinking depths.
You first, I said.
Claver went down. He was spry for a man of his years. I followed him, unhappily sealing the hatch above us with a clang. When I got near the bottom of the ladder, I half expected an ambush by Claver, so I let go and let myself drop. I splashed down into a river of filth.
Damn, boy, Claver complained. You splashed me in the face.
Now what?
I asked. Claver led the way. I got the feeling he'd been in these sewers before, maybe lots of times. He followed a twisting path, and soon the pipes became cleaner, and the water relatively sweet.
We're in the runoff pipes, the storm drains. They don't usually get this much use. But Gelt Station has seasons, you know. When the planet's axis tilts relative to the local star, the amount of radiation hitting the station varies. More warmth causes more steam to rise and more condensation to gather on the roof. Weird to think that a space station can be big enough to have its own weather patterns, isn't it? Claver liked to talk, but I didn't mind. He knew things. This place was still new to me, and right now I wanted to learn whatever I could from him. "What's your angle, Claver?" I asked him as we slogged along, our backs bent in the dark pipes.
"Angle? Same as anyone's. I want to live as long as possible and extract all the joy I can from life."
"Seems to me you're failing in that department right now," I pointed out. He paused and glanced back at me.
"You've got a point. I wouldn't call this my finest hour. But things are about to change, you watch. If you survive another few days, you'll witness a realignment of the universe. In my favor."
I didn't see how that was possible, but I wanted to keep him talking. "You must know something," I said. "Otherwise, you're as shit-off stupid as they come. You've thrown away your career with Germanica and your life. The legions will never stop hunting for you. You have to know that."
Claver shook his head and pressed onward. "Not so. They have no idea what's coming. Even hegemony is clueless. They'll be taken completely by surprise when the breakup hits."
"Breakup?" I asked, frowning. "What breakup?"
"I'm talking about the Empire, boy. Not even you can believe it's going to last much longer. Once the core goes, the fringe can hang on for a little while, flying on inertia. But we can't deny reality forever."
I frowned. I'd known what he was talking about, but I hadn't wanted to know. Could this mean rat of a man be right? Was the Empire doomed? The thought of it was terrifying and exhilarating at the same time.
"What do you know?"
I asked him. "What's happening in the core systems?"
"War," he said seriously. "Civil war. They couldn't hold it together. Silly in a way. Why destroy something that's worked for countless years over petty squabbles? Who cares which one of their fantastically rich societies gets the next slice of frontier worlds, really? They've already had more than we can dream of."
"War?" I asked, echoing the word. It caused me pain inside. I'd known, of course. We all had. The core systems were at war with one another. The organization I'd been part of all my life was crumbling somewhere in the center of a billion glowing stars. "What will happen out here on the frontier?"
"That's the right question," Claver said, turning around again. His eyes had lit up. "Destruction seeds construction. It always has. New small kingdoms will arise where once there was a single massive empire. I figure a smart man, an opportunist who's well-connected, this could be his time."
I jabbed my finger at him. "What about serving Earth in this dark time? Your planet needs every smart man she has." His brow furrowed and his lips twisted.
"Earth. They'll bumble along trying to maintain the fiction. They'll survive an empire that's already dead and gone. We're not in a single empire anymore. Can't you see that, fool? Frontier 921 is part of Mogwa faction territory, always has been. They own us. Now that they're independent from the Empire, we serve them. Unfortunately, among the Galactics, they're small fry."
His words were sickening me for some reason. I didn't want to believe him. Since my first day of watching net vids and my first day of school, I'd been taught about the good side of the Empire and about the security and certainty it provided for all of us. To know that it was crumbling, that was hard to take.
Mogwa? I asked. Chief Inspector Zlor is one of them, isn't he?
Yes, that's right.
Seems wrong that our fate will be decided by creatures we rarely meet, I said.
Exactly. Now you've got it. You've grasped just a tiny thread of reality, but I believe it will strengthen and take root, even in your dim mind. You'll figure this out, McGill. I have faith in you, as I do all common men. We're no longer going to be slaves to a distant empire. We'll ditch the Mogwa because they'll weaken. They've already withdrawn their battle fleet, valuing their territory in the core systems 1,000 times more than they value our pathetic star systems. But that's the answer, don't you see? We'll rebel. We have to. It's only a matter of time, and it's happening right now, all over this station.
Chaos and death, I said. That's all I see.
Revolutions are rarely orderly affairs. Who are you, McGill? A soldier? Loyal to the Empire down to the last? I would have thought that of all the creatures crawling in the slime of this station, you'd be the first to bite your master's hand.
Oh, I'm a biter, all right, I told him. But don't you think we ought to keep moving?
No, he said, gesturing upward toward a closed valve. We've already arrived.
I looked upward. This is the way out?
Claver rolled his eyes at me, saying nothing. I hesitated.
Why do you do all this? I asked him. The gun running. The goons waiting to rob us at the bank. When I didn't let you steal those credits, you left and altered every thug on the street to waylay us, didn't you? All for a few Imperial coins?
Are you going to open that hatch? Claver asked. All you have to do is touch the key to it.
Not until you answer my questions.
There isn't much time.
Then you better start talking, sir. He glared at me for a moment, but then gave in.
Yeah, I did it. I set up the whole thing. And yes, I already told you that I believe this is a golden opportunity for a man like me to strike it rich.
You're standing in a sewer, bleeding, I pointed out. Your plans have failed.
A momentary setback, he snapped. I admit things haven't gone smoothly. They would have if I'd had more time, but I was forced to act months ahead of schedule.
I almost asked why, but then I realized what he meant. Legion Varus. We came too early. Germanica wasn't slated to go home for 6 months, but Turov accelerated the rotation, forcing you to move up your plans.
Exactly, he said with bitterness. Now you know one more reason why I shot that woman. Can we get moving now, or do you want a lecture on the birds and the bees?
I reached up and tapped the valve with the key. It opened. After a rush of hot water ran down over us, Claver began climbing out.
Move fast, he said. This water is from the cooling jackets. It's mildly radioactive.
His words propelled me, and I was soon standing by his side. I looked around, realizing we were in a vast, open area. There were ships standing nearby, shuttles and skimmers. Claver watched me closely.
All of these were built off-world, he said. All of them are therefore controllable by even the lowliest galactic official. All they have to do is use a key like this one.
Looking down at the shell in my hand, I began to realize the kind of power it wielded. I could control anything built for trade within the Empire. It was like having the passcodes to operate every spaceship ever built.
Chapter 27. We picked out a quiet, unmanned pinnace that sat far out on the edge of the hangar. The ship was dark, as there was no artificial light close enough to illuminate her sleek lines. Walking up to her, I felt a thrill. I'd been aboard a dozen space-going craft, but I'd never even contemplated stealing one and flying it myself. It was the kind of crazy thing I could see myself doing, but I'd honestly never considered it before. Claver must have thought he had a dupe on his hands, because he didn't stop talking the whole way to the ship's hatch.
See how the starlight shines out there? There's a barrier field keeping back the vacuum, or rather, it keeps a breathable atmosphere contained.
Starlight shone down on the small ship as we approached her, and I had to admit she was a beauty. Streamlined, so she could fly in space or within a planetary atmosphere. Pinnaces served to ferry important people between starships and planets or stations. The big ships, like Minotaur, weren't designed to ever touch the surface of any world. They weren't built to withstand G-forces or endure atmospheric friction. For heavy transportation, they used lifters, which were inelegant ships that could enter an atmosphere and leave it again, but couldn't fly to the stars, as they had no form of warp drive. Pinnaces were similar, but lighter, faster, and smaller. They were like private jets, the kind of vehicle only the rich and powerful were familiar with. I tapped the hatch with a thrill of excitement. I remembered that feeling. I'd felt it as a kid, while stealing fruit from a government tree. The hatch opened immediately like magic. This key was growing on me. I realized it could open doors I'd never thought would budge for the likes of me.
You like it, don't you?
Claver asked, studying me.
Your first taste of real power. We're not as far apart as you think we are, McGill. I know a kindred spirit when I see one. We're both rule breakers, old school throwbacks. We don't belong in a universe full of laws, drones, and cameras.
Or locks either, apparently, I said. Chuckling, Claver ducked into the hatch and I followed him. I didn't trust the old bastard as far as I could spit, not even half that far. There was no one aboard. We slid into the cockpit and strapped in. Claver took the controls.
You're no tech, so I'm assuming you can't even pilot a buzzer.
I could probably manage that, I said. But you can fly us out of here. Just where, by the way, are we headed? I'd already calculated the answer before I'd asked the question. I was more than certain he'd say he had a hideout down on the surface of the planet. By all reports, it was a hive of villainy and confusion. Where else would a pair of fugitives run? We couldn't drift around in orbit. They'd find us eventually, and they might even shoot us down. Grinning, Claver pointed through the pinnace's front dome. The blast shields had slid away so he could see where we were going as the small ship powered up and glided toward the bubble-like force field that held back the infinite vacuum of space. I followed his gesture, and I realized he wasn't pointing at the planet, which stretched out, vast and smoke-gray below us. Startled, I looked at him to see if he was joking. His expression was intent, and I realized he was in earnest. "We're headed for Minotaur?" I demanded incredulously. "How the hell do you expect to get aboard a warship?" He waggled his finger at my shell.
"You've got the key, kid."
The scale of this man's ambition was just beginning to dawn on me. "You're crazy."
"What was your plan?"
"I thought maybe you had a hideout down on the planet. Maybe some smuggler friends you'd paid off, or a stash of credit coins that would buy those friends."
"Not a bad guess, actually," he said. "I had those things not long ago, but the riots have gone too far. They're spreading across the planet as well as the station. The brass knows. Did they tell you that part?"
I frowned at him and gazed downward. My commanders hadn't talked about the planet's surface much. They'd been grimly focused on hanging on to the station. The way it looked to me, we were on our last legs up here as well. "You're saying we've lost this entire world?" I asked. "How could that happen? What the hell did you help unleash?" For the first time since I'd met him, Claver looked a trifle sheepish. He shrugged.
"A man plans and schemes. He does his best. But sometimes things do get out of hand. A genie is easier to release from a bottle than it is to stuff back in, you know what I mean?"
"No, not exactly. Tell me," At this point, a light flashed on the console. A voice spoke. "This is Minotaur. There are no flights scheduled to dock with this vessel. Identify yourself and your intentions."
I looked at Klaver helplessly. "What do we say? They'll blow us out of space."
"Don't say a damn thing. Think like a galactic. Be as arrogant as all hell."
He pointed to the console.
"Touch the key to that contact."
I did as he said, even as Minotaur repeated their order. The voice cut out halfway through its little speech.
"Boarding approved,"
said the voice, sounding surprised and confused. "Are any special accommodations required, sirs?"
"Don't say a damn thing," Klaver told me. "Let them sweat. We'll roll in and set down like we own the place. Which we do, in a way."
"What's our cover story?"
"We're escorting a galactic. He's aboard this ship, and this is a snap inspection. Watch them scurry like mice. We'll snip their tails for fun."
Incredulous, I watched events unfold exactly as Klaver suggested. After we glided in to land inside Minotaur's hangar, he marched off the pinnace with a regal air and scoffed at anyone he met along the way. They all bought his story.
"All personnel are to report to their modules and stay there," he ordered.
The officer who was on hand to greet him hesitated. It was none other than Germanica's Centurion Dubois himself. This was the man who'd handed over Klaver to Graves and I for arrest days earlier. I figured Dubois had to recognize me, and I knew he recognized Klaver. He had to be thinking he was in the middle of one of Klaver's infamous schemes.
"This man was Graves' thug, wasn't he?"
the Centurion asked, looking at me.
"I get it, Klaver. You bribed him. Well done. You bought off your own guard and escaped Graves with style. There's a troubling report, however, from Varus. They say, I know this is crazy, but they say you killed the Imperator."
"That's a damned lie,"
Klaver said with a level of conviction I could never have duplicated.
"But it doesn't matter anyway. All such petty squabbles have been superseded. I'm escorting a VIP aboard this pinnace."
"Yes," Dubois said. "Dispatch told me about that. I have trouble believing one of their kind is aboard."
"Centurion Dubois," Klaver said, "what you believe is immaterial. But I'll try to help illuminate the situation in two steps."
"That would be appreciated."
"First, there's this."
Klaver produced a handful of golden coins. They gleamed and shone in the bright lights of the hangar deck. I recognized them right away. They were illegal credit coins, galactic credits from the core systems. Dubois' eyes popped, and he stashed the coins as fast as Klaver had produced them. Faster, maybe.
"Second, I'll make a statement," Klaver said. "A wise man would execute my orders promptly, because the only life in this system that truly matters is in jeopardy. Galactic agents circulate on many worlds. This world happens to be blessed with the presence of an individual of superior rank. I've managed to become her protector and spokesman."
Dubois shook his head.
"What a sly operator.
Your rep is well deserved. How do you want to do this?"
"As you may realize, the station will soon be lost to rebels,"
Klaver began. Dubois and his subordinates exchanged glances.
"You think it's that bad?"
"The galactic I'm escorting believes this to be the case. What I think doesn't matter."
"Ah, so she wants to save her own skin. I get it. What do we do?"
Klaver demanded that a color guard be placed encircling the empty pinnace, then had Dubois lead us personally to Minotaur's bridge. He requested a vac suit, and one was provided. I cleared my throat meaningfully. Klaver looked at me as if I was an afterthought. He knew I was the only man present that could blow his scheme sky high. Worse, I still had the galactic key in my possession. He waved for the man to hand over a vac suit to me as well. We both got into them while the Skrull bridge crew stared with their hindmost eyes. The crew was, naturally enough, made up of aliens. The Skrull looked like spindly spiders with hard shells and wizened monkey faces. They were an odd race that hired out as starship crewmen to dozens of worlds. In that way, they were like us. Skilled labor was their trade good, just as Earth's had long been mercenary troops. Once we were suited up, Claver ordered Centurion Dubois to send every man they had to their modules on lockdown. Until that happened, the Galactic wouldn't step out of the ship. Dubois whistled.
What cowards they can be. I suppose after 1,000 years of extended life, they can get that way. I'll do it, but it's an insult. Seal the Skrull crewmen inside the bridge as well, Claver said. Oh, come now. Their species is as harmless as a bunch of house cats.
The Skrull watched us as closely as they watched their instruments, but said nothing. Skrulls rarely spoke to aliens like us. They kept to themselves and performed their hired duties as crewmen. I had no idea what they thought of us. Probably they figured we were something akin to feral beasts. I got the feeling they were an orderly, peaceful race. In contrast, we must have seemed like a species of rabid dogs.
Your opinions may be correct,
Claver said, turning to his broken tapper as if to operate it.
I'll report them to Her Excellency immediately. Centurion Dubois, I'll need your full name and a designation number to complete my report concerning your refusal.
Centurion Dubois began to sputter.
Come on, Claver. I'm not refusing. Look, just tell her. It's already done.
He turned on his heel and began barking orders. Claver looked on sternly, staying in character.
Soon, the ship emptied.
Every Germanica legionnaire was safely tucked away inside a module like a hamster in a cage. Only the group that encircled the empty pinnace remained free and armed. Claver took care of the color guard next. When he finally made his move, I have to admit, the man was ruthless and swift. He walked to the console that managed the vacuum controls. Without a moment's hesitation, he took down the field that kept air inside the hangar deck. The Skrulls eyed him, and a few chittered a comment, but they didn't interfere. They were here to transport crazy humans to battle. What we did to our own kind was our own business. Down below on the hangar deck, men were sucked out into space, screaming until there was no more air in their lungs. They twirled away into the blackness and soon stopped struggling. I watched the console seeing their eyeballs swell and their blood boil in their veins as the zero-pressure environment interacted with their chemistry.
"Was that necessary?" I demanded.
Claver threw up a cautionary hand.
"Stop crying over them. They'll get revives eventually. If we die now, we're permed."
"Okay, but why did you pull the whole color guard nonsense in the first place?"
"Two reasons. First, it makes the entire situation more believable and keeps everyone's focus on the pinnace with the Galactic inside. Secondly, they're bound to have dropped a few weapons onto the deck on their way out."
"Ah," I said, catching on. "That's why you made sure we put on vac suits."
"Right. Let's go."
I followed the madman I'd allied myself with back to the hangar deck, and we indeed found a few working snap rifles. I stopped him as he went to pick one up.
"Hold it," I said, my pistol placed against his skull. "I shouldn't have let you walk behind me," he complained.
"That's right." I took a snap rifle, and we left the rest where they lay. We headed back toward the modules.
"What's next?" I asked him. "You can't possibly hope to fly a Minotaur back to Earth."
"Why not?"
"Because I don't think you can talk your way past everyone in hegemony."
"I suppose you're right. We'll have to fix the situation here."
Frowning, I kept close to him. My newly acquired snap rifle was loaded and the safety was off. My finger hovered over the trigger. I thought this might well be the moment where Claver decided his bodyguard was more trouble than he was worth. We moved to a central console outside the stacked modules. I knew these containers were empty for the most part. Only four of them were occupied, according to the boards. Three of them held the three units of troops that Germanica had stationed.